Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
Oh, the opening caught me off guard. You know, we were having a nice little chat in the green room. But thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Greywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate, and hopefully soon to be teacher of the Unnamed Path.
And I'm Matthew Sidney, songwriter, storyteller, seeker, and relatively new initiate of the Unnamed Path, but I feel like I'm getting older every day.
And you're listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. On this podcast, we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors and laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. We're glad you've decided to join us today, and we hope you'll be part of the show by calling in at 347-308-8222, or you can hang out in the chat room, which I will see is working in just a minute, or you can drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at walking_theup, or you can find us on Facebook, which is probably the best place to get in touch with us, at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. So, hello, Matthew. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Things are good. It's certainly been a busy week, a little bit challenging. Yesterday evening, my roommate and dear friend had to put his cat to sleep. So last night was, so it was kind of emotional. And just now getting used to the emptiness, you know, here in the house, it just feels different. That the presence is not there, and so we're both processing grief and going through that process.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the cat sick, or was it just really old?
He was having kidney problems. He was 13. He had been on medication for about a year, and it unfortunately that's nature. It's the cycle of life.
Mm-hmm.
Nature took its course, now, and it was time to let go.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not a cat person, so I don't know how you would equate cat years to human years. Is it kind of like with a dog?
They're very similar to dog years. Cats often can live a little bit longer than dogs, but it's... cat years and dog years are pretty close.
Okay.
So 13 years is a full life.
Yes. Okay. It was a fairly old cat. It had lots of love.
He was very well taken care of, for sure.
Well, other than that little bit of sadness, how have you been, Matthew?
Other than that, things are very good. I am, like you, I'm also taking the Unnamed Path student teacher class, which is wonderful, but it's a little time consuming and takes a lot of energy and mental energy and commitment and time. And So I'm feeling really good about it, but it's certainly certainly has me juggling a lot. Certainly has me dealing with a lot on my plate. And right now, I am deep in the throes of shadow work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that because I went through the student teacher training last year, and I remember. Part of it was having to delve back into the shadow, into a deeper level of shadow work to become a teacher. And yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, so I'm spending time with all my personal demons, you know, petting them, feeding them, taking them for walks. They're very high maintenance. You know, all my insecurities I get to... What?
Yeah. I was going to say, don't feed it after midnight and don't get it wet.
true. I try not to do that. So, but it's good. It's healing, but it's not easy. You know, really looking at my insecurities and my own personal weaknesses face to face, my own biases. So it's good and it's rewarding, but it's not easy work.
No.
How have you been?
Week has been. I've been good. The week has been just kind of off for me. This ending of what month? Like I don't even know what month I'm in at the moment. Oh, it's April. That's right. I've been a little out of sorts the last couple of weeks, and I think it has a little bit to do with, on our last show when we had a Bill Skywatcher on, and we were talking about astrology and whatnot. You know, we talked a little bit about I think we're about to exit, or we've already exited Venus in retrograde. And so it's all about...
I think Venus goes direct on tomorrow. I could be wrong, but I think it's the 9th.
Yeah. So I've just been dealing with a whole bunch of different emotions and whatnot surrounding past relationships, my current relationship, and just working through them. And so it's kind of throwing me off my game a little bit. Normally I'm really good about getting everything ready for the month and, you know, having everything, like, we don't have to do much and it's just boom, 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 let's go. I've just been so out of it. I'm getting everything back on track and slowly getting everything in order. And, you know, just part of it is, you know, just talking with my partner a lot and, you know, trying to work through issues we come across and, you know, stuff that, you know, we need to work through and whatnot. So it's a journey.
Well, today I'm very excited because we are pleased to welcome Reverend Houston Cypress, Yahalitke, as he is called in his own language. He grew up in the swamps of the Florida Everglades. The Everglades have been a refuge for his ancestors and continues to be a source of traditional plant medicines. The endangered beauty of the natural environment made such an impression on him during his childhood that today he articulates strategies for preserving this World Heritage Site. Houston is a two-spirit poet, artist, and activist from the Otter Clan of the Miccosukee Tribe of Indians of Florida. He resides on the Miccosukee Reservation located west of Miami, Florida, and he maintains a number of traditional villages located on tree islands scattered throughout Water Conservation Area 3A, the area known as the Historic River of Grass, and called by his community Paha Yaple, which can be translated as shimmering waters.
He combines art, conflict management, communications, and spirituality through an organization that he helped create, Love the Everglades Movement.
Ooh. All right. Let's bring Houston on. Welcome, Houston.
All right. Good afternoon, my people. Thank you for an opportunity to spend some time with y'all.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes, yes.
Yes. I'm really, I really welcome this opportunity, again, just to get to know y'all a little bit better and spend a little bit of this afternoon with y'all.
Cool. Very cool. Well, I'm going to turn things around a little bit. Before I start interrogating you, I wanted to give you the opportunity to ask us if you have any questions about the Unnamed Path.
Well, I'm new to this, to the Unnamed Path, so I really don't know what to ask. What would be a good question of asking to get to know y'all a little bit better? Why don't you give me some guidance on the Unnamed Path?
So let's see. So the Unnamed Path is a spiritual path that was developed by the late Hyperion. In his shamanic work, he and, from what I understand, a couple other individuals he was working with at the time made contact with a group of ancestral spirits. Ancestral spirits of men who love men, which we can translate as these are men who we would consider in modern times to be gay or bi or even, it's a very large umbrella term for queer men. And these ancestors came forward with teachings and techniques and information that they asked him to share with the community. And the Unnamed Path comes in four parts, four primary subjects of teaching, and those are energy healing, magic and prophecy, shamanic journeying, and death walking. So it's a relatively new tradition. It was started about 10 years ago, and mm-hmm. it is growing. And Michael and I are both initiates of the Unnamed Path, and it's been a very, very exciting journey. A big part of the teaching from these ancestors is that what they call men who love men have a unique spiritual frequency. And that affords us a special role to play as spiritual healers within our communities. And according to the ancestors, many, many moons ago, men who love men, what modern people call queer men, were naturally oftentimes the healers and shamanic practitioners of the peoples, all the way back as far as the last ice age. And what the ancestors are calling us to do is to step back into that role. And the reason being is that's going to help restore the balance to mankind's relationship with the natural world.
Very well said.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and I'm really glad that I addressed y'all as my people when we first started, because hearing the kind of things that you're talking about, I totally resonate with that in terms of the way that I grew up in my Miccosukee community, and also the growth and healing that I'm finding through the various two-spirit circles that I joined across the continent known as Turtle Island. And so, like, hearing you talk about contacting and communicating and honoring these traditions from ancestral spirits, using all these different techniques, tools, and modalities. Like, yeah, like I hear you, and these are things that that we uphold as two-spirit people and as indigenous people. So thank you very much for this opportunity to talk about these things and other things with you today. Wow, what an honor.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Well, thank you, Houston.
I knew we had something in common.
Yes.
Houston, would you mind telling us a bit about the Miccosukee tribe, who they are, and what are their origins?
All right, cool. Well, today we have an indigenous community which is located in the Everglades, which is the River of Grass, just west of Miami. So you can actually look at the Florida Peninsula and find the southern tip of the Florida Peninsula and go to the exact middle, and there you'll find a swampy area, and that's the place where my community has found a refuge for the past few hundred years or so. Prior to that, we were roaming throughout the state of Florida and up into the Panhandle, and we are an indigenous community. I like to refer to us as a society of clans, and our clans are large extended families. We have a number of clans today. We used to have more, but some of the clans died out over time, and so the clans that we have today include like the Wind Clan, the Panther, the Bird, the Otter, the Toad, the Deer, and a few others. And so our extended families have a matriarchal and matrilineal lineage, which means that whatever family your mom is, that's the family that you're born into. So I'm a part of the Otter Clan or the Otter family. And our clans originated in our tradition from the beginning of time. We had the Breath Maker. We had his brother, who was a little bit of a nefarious kind of person. And they created the world and all the things that you see in it, created the universe and created the people. And so we have a fire, we have laws, we have teachings and ceremonies, we have a social structure, a society of respect, and medicines and ceremonies and a language that we are striving to pass on to the next generations. So it's an oral tradition. We don't rely on any writing. All of the things that we uphold are passed on through the stories and through the medicine and through the dreaming. And so these are the kinds of things that we value and that we're upholding today in the changing world. So like in a broad overview, that's a little bit of who we are, what our values are, and where we're living today.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. What does Two-Spirit mean from your perspective?
All right. So from my perspective, Two-Spirit is about gender diversity. It's a term that a number of communities came together in a ceremony in the early 90s. I think it may have been 1990. And these communities came together and decided to agree on using this term, Two-Spirit, to replace an older term that was being used in academia and literature by anthropologists. So the older term was Birdash. And so Two-Spirit is about gender diversity from an indigenous perspective. We have a number of communities across the continent who look at gender roles in their community from so many different ways outside of the gender binary that Western societies use. So in the indigenous perspective, there can be two, there can be three or four or more genders. And we look at ourselves as embodying a flowing and fluid sort of identity that honors the masculine and the feminine within us, or something more. And so it's about gender diversity. And we're also really concerned with honoring our traditions in our indigenous communities. So So it's about gender diversity, honoring the traditions, and keeping these traditional teachings alive. And I think that those are the elements that represent what this two-spirit role is for me. Gender diversity, traditions, and our connection to the land. That's what I bring to two-spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I wanted to ask about non-Native people using the term two-spirit to describe themselves, because I do understand that there's some disagreement around that. So I wanted to feel out your perspective on the appropriateness.
Okay, yeah, well, I think that would be considered cultural appropriation, simply because mm-hmm. This idea of two-spirit was evolving from an indigenous use. Some of our communities are translating how gender diversity is described in their own languages, and the closest approximation they could come to it was two-spirit. So it's a literal translation from a traditional or indigenous term. So, and we're also concerned with the work of decolonization, meaning that we want to keep these traditional teachings alive and bring them forward to the next generation. So, it's really about the work of honoring our indigenous heritage and our traditions and our languages and our medicines and our spiritualities. So I think that it's more appropriate for indigenous people to be using it and not appropriate for non-indigenous, non-First Nations people to be using. So I think it would be kind of cultural appropriation for non-First Nations or non-indigenous folks to be using it.
I very much agree with that. It's actually an interesting side note. Because we are a path for queer men, we often have people who are not initiated in our tradition who try to associate our spiritual practice as something with the two-spirit that the Native that first people use, and we always have to be like, no, that is not what we are. That is, that's the Native tradition, which, we are not a part of. We are something different. So we're always trying to make sure that people don't confuse us and try to make sure that they understand it. We were technically culturally appropriating.
Yeah, the kind of things that I was hearing Matthew talk about in the introductory about the Unnamed Path was really empowering for me, that mm-hmm. other communities such as yourselves have communion with the spirits and are being informed and empowered by the spirits. So I think it's a beautiful thing that that your community is cultivating for yourselves, and I really support your work. And I think I look forward to opportunities to collaborate spiritually wherever it's appropriate. Because in my community, there's some things that you might not be able to participate in. And I respect that if there's things like that in your community. But I know that that there might be things where we can collaborate, and I look forward to that. So I'm really happy to learn about your work, and I support y'all.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing about that is all of our we have our own holidays, different from the Wheel of the Year, and all but one are public holidays. Like, there are public service holidays where we go out and interact with the community. So, yeah, definitely look forward to hopefully working with you on something like that.
Yeah, that's great. And like, speaking of holidays, like in my community, we're getting ready for a big celebration. It's almost we're approaching New Year. So we have a lot of things to get ready for, big ceremonies. So it's a really good time for us.
Oh, that's exciting.
Awesome. Yeah. Right around the corner.
Is your calendar is it lunar based?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right. But I guess your new year is always in the spring.
Yeah, it's usually in May.
Okay. Very cool.
I was just going to ask, how does being two-spirit shape your spiritual life?
I think that I would like to start off by just kind of like outlining my spiritual journey, because in my Miccosukee community, I was raised to honor and respect all the different clans in my community. And each of the different clans have their own rituals, their own lingo, their own practices and customs. So I have to honor that. And if they do something a little bit differently, I can't criticize them. So I grew up with a society of respect. And I found that that was a really good training for my entry into the Universalist Church that I'm a participant in, because it was just extending that society of respect to a global setting or a global context, and in a universal context. So the way that being two-spirit shapes my spiritual practice is that it's an opportunity to embrace others, to respect others, and if there are appropriate opportunities to like collaborate and pray together. So I think that it's a combination of respecting one another, but also sharing and supporting one another.
Awesome. Now, were there any challenges for you with your family and with your tribe when you came out, or when you realized you were two-spirit?
Yeah, there has been. And, like, talking about that, like, when I was coming out, I was coming out because I didn't have any models or paradigms for me to work with. And so as I was growing up and as I was hitting puberty and finding out that I was attracted to the young men in my community and having crushes with other guys, I'm like, oh my God, I must be gay. And so I came out as a gay man. And then I started exploring and reading and researching and learning about two-spirit traditions in other indigenous communities. And so, long story short, I didn't know any better, so I came out as a gay man. But now I know better. And what I mean is that we're looking at this process as a coming in now. Because when LGBT people come out, I don't know, sometimes people feel like, I felt like I had to muster up my courage. I was anticipating conflict, and I had to make this big announcement about my sexuality to friends or family. And I had to have like an escape plan, right? Because was I going to be kicked out? Was there going to be resistance or violence? Or was I going to be rejected? So I think like those are some of the elements that I went through when I was coming out. But now that I'm like looking at it from an indigenous perspective as a two-spirit, it's really about coming into the circle. And so as a First Nations or an indigenous person, like now I'm understanding my relationship and my value to my family, to the Everglades, to the water, to the elements. So it's not necessarily declaring or announcing anymore. It's just being present. Present in my power, present in my my sovereignty, but also my connection to my community and my ecology. So I think that that's how I look at things now. It's a coming in process, coming into the circle as a two-spirit person.
Has it gotten easier in your community, say for this new generation coming up, since you've, you know, had this experience, has it helped pave the way a little bit?
I think so. I mean, it depends. For some people, yeah, I see that there's a very young people that are out or gender diverse. But I think it's also some issues with their families, and because we have people that are close-minded, and then we have people that have an open embrace. And so what I'm talking about is like there's a young person who reached out to me who is very still in the closet about being a trans person, but was really looking for help. So I've been honored to feel that they consider me a resource. So I try to be present for them and with them and to hear what they're saying and what they're struggling with and to offer support. So some people feel confident and loved and nurtured enough to be who they are authentically, and others are still struggling with it. So that's what I'm finding. Because I came out as a gay man because I didn't know in my Miccosukee ways that there were precedents for gender diversity. But now I'm finding that there are. Has it been hidden? Is it not being talked about? Has it been lost? These are things I'm still investigating and exploring and finding out about.
Mm-hmm. Can you share with us a little bit of what you've discovered around your people's traditional perspectives on gender?
Well, so I was... I had the privilege to produce a TV program for the Miccosukee tribe from 2010 to 2013. And part of that allowed me to go into museums and to do the research, to go into archives of the visual documentation of my community in the past 200 years. And I found myself in Fort Myers at the Fort Myers, Florida, which museum? One of these historical museums in downtown Fort Myers. It's probably the only one there. And so I'm looking at investigating the Tamiami Trail, how it was built through the Everglades. And there's this tall, gangly, lanky, old white guy stalking me through the museum. It was kind of creepy. Like, he would be hiding behind an exhibit and, like, lurking. I'm like, what is this guy doing? Like, so I got my crew and like, let's get out of here. Like, we're done. We're going to get out of here. This guy's following us. So we're in the parking lot. We're loading our stuff. And then, like, he jumps us. And like, hey, you're Miccosukee. I need to talk to you. Come with me. And he drags me to his office across the street. And it turns out his grandfather had a relationship with my Miccosukee community, like, in the early 1900s. And he has a great photo archive. And some of, like, my grandparents and their parents and our ancestors were documented in these really loving photographs. Because people, outsiders would come and take our picture, and you could tell the Indians didn't like them in their face. They gave them side eye. They gave them dirty looks. Not these pictures. These were their friends. Like, they were friends. Like, they were happy. They were cooking, telling stories. I'm like, oh, my God, who are you? And it turns out, yeah, like his grandparents was good friends with our grandparents. And so he's like, look, I got to show you something. He takes me to the Fort Myers airport, and there's a beautiful 40-foot-tall mural of two Miccosukee women in the airport. And he's like, look, one of whom's a man and one of whom's a woman. And so long story short, I'm looking at one of the early – a documentation of one of the trans women in our Miccosukee community. And this trans woman is beautiful. It's got the hair going on, got the Miccosukee bling. So it showed me some precedents for gender diversity. And then making friends with Seminole people who speak a language that's a little bit different from ours. I learned the word for the third gender in their language, which is Inuskaba, which is about the third gender and in their Creek or Seminole community. So these are things that I'm learning about and exploring and trying to understand a little bit better.
Wow. And then how do you see the role of Two Spirits within the context of your community and queer folk within the context of mainstream community, as things are evolving, how do you see, or how would you like to see our role in society evolve in terms of our capacity as healers, our capacities of also bridging the gap, so to speak, between the masculine and the feminine?
All right. So I think that the visionary aspect is that we're going to be throwing some badass parties in the woods. What I mean by that is, like, we are creating forums where people can come together. We are bridging worlds, and we're in the woods because we're doing it in a way that is sustainable and respectful of the land. So are these parties, are these ceremonies, are these initiations? Yeah, it's all of that. And we are doing it in a way that is respectful of our place in the world and in the universe. So we are mediators, we are ceremonial leaders, we are bridges between communities, we are learning from each other and with each other. So that's what I see as queer people, whether we are queer people in the Miccosukee tribe, whether we're queer people in other communities, like we are holding hands and we are dancing and singing at all hours of the day and night.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about Love the Everglades?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so me and my buddy, we met up in at the Art Institute in downtown Miami. I didn't like him at first. He was kind of like a gangster. He thought he was the shit and swaggering through the hallway. And I kind of avoided him until I met up with him at the bar one night. And we went out and ended up partying, and it turns out we had a lot in common. And maybe a year or so later, I decided to invite him to an environmental study that the Miccosukee tribe was doing. And he was totally blown away by the intersection of culture and science. And he was like, yeah, we got to do what we can to give opportunities for people to care about the water and the Everglades. And so we give people opportunities by way of field trips, art exhibits, ceremony and prayer, coalition building, and direct action. So that was how the Love the Everglades movement started. And those are the kinds of activities that we still do today. And we like to do them during the year, our field trips, our art exhibits, our symposia, our concerts. We're getting ready for the new year. Even though Miccosukee are celebrating their new year here in South Florida, it turns out that the South Florida Water Management District also recognizes May as the new water year. So we're going to be setting up some prayers in the park in North Miami. And it's going to be a series where people can come together in an interfaith manner and pray for the water or for the environment or the spirits of the land, however they want to bring, whatever traditions they want to bring, it's going to be interfaith. So that's how we got started and the kind of things we're up to.
Very cool. Now, you pretty much grew up in the Everglades. What changes, good or bad, have you seen in the Everglades during your lifetime?
All right. So I'm 36 years old. I'm going to be 37. So in my time, I've seen the loss of biodiversity in terms of the indigenous species and then the invasion of exotic species. So we have less of the small furry critters, because the big serpents are coming in and eating them. We have less of our traditional plant medicines because other invasives are coming in and taking over. And an incredible degradation of water quality in specific areas. There's been improvement. Don't get me wrong. There's been really good work in some areas, but continuing degradation in other areas, specifically in the areas where my community live and have their villages. So we're at ground zero for water quality problems, and we're really looking forward to amplifying that message and seeing what we can do to build coalition around those things. So those are the kinds of things that I'm seeing, and when I talk to my parents and my grandparents and great-grandparents, they talk about the Everglades as if it's a skeleton of its former self. They would see flocks of birds so thick that it blocks out the sun, blanketing the landscape, So it's been a very dramatic change in the past century.
And what do you think is the, as of course there's more than one, but what do you think is the most serious threat to the Everglades today?
Money. And what I mean by money is that we have a political system that has made it very convenient for large infusions of to manipulate the political system, to influence the propaganda. And so that has really warped the message around things. And that has prevented people from participating. That has prevented people from connecting. And so I think money is a big thing, the influence that the money brings. And then if we were going to talk about it from an ecological or environmental perspective, I'd like to start with talking about the water, because the water quality is a foundation for the circle of life, and it has consequences all the way up and down. So money and water quality.
And so given that, what's the number one thing that those of us who care about the environment should be demanding of our politicians? Where, what would be our first thing to try to tackle?
And it's kind of like, because I want to say money again. It's weird because it's a double-edged sword, this idea of money, this idea of currency. Because as much of a negative impact that it has had on the land and our minds and our communities, like, we also need an infusion of cash to really authorize the projects that need to be created to filter the water, to encourage the water flow. So as much of a negative influence it has been in the process, I think that there needs to be a direct infusion to water quality treatment projects and things like that, but also funding sustainable access for people, ways that are respectful for people to get into the water, on the land, building connections, building relationships, because without access, there can be no stewardship. Without access and without use, there can be no stewardship.
Now,
I want to say that I am hopeful, because when our communities are focused and getting things done, like, we see an incredible bounce back in the ecology. Places like the Kissimmee River Valley and others that have been restored, the animals come back, the plants come back, nature is revived. So there is hope as well.
Now, with everything that was happening last year and that, you know, still going on up at Standing Rock, did the approach of the water protectors at Standing Rock has it influenced your own approach towards activism?
Yes, because I think that it reminds us that there is a strong spiritual foundation that we have to maintain when we're talking about these things, and also to do what we can to center the indigenous voice and the indigenous methods and the collaboration. Spirituality and centering indigenous voices. I think that those are the kinds of things that I'm learning from and respecting from the Standing Rock phenomena.
You know, where would you say is your vision for Florida's future? Like, what accomplishments do you hope to see in the next 4 to 5 years?
Let's see. I want to see what we can do to to find a way for sustainable development and to protect our wildlife, our wildlife corridors, to protect and preserve as much of the green space as possible, because we have such an incredible pressure for developing these spaces and for monetizing state parks and for drilling and fracking in the Big Cypress National Preserve and other areas. So, like, let's keep those green places sacred as much as possible. I think that's something that we can rally around in the next 4 or 5 years, especially things like the Big Cypress National Preserve and curtailing fracking and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to chat a little. What are your visions? What would you envision? I'm one voice, but we have lots of other voices and great ideas that we need to hear from. What do you think?
Well, I think one thing that you mentioned is something that I certainly believe is critical, and that is sustainable development. For me personally, I think that should include not just sustainable development, but a evolution into sustainable living all around. For example, how can we help the city of Miami, for instance, to become more sustainable in the way it manages its resources? How can we help West Palm Beach? How can we help Orlando and existing communities lighten their footprint, so to speak, metaphorically, so that there's less, destruction and less degradation of, I'm from here, so I'm from South Florida, so I'm keenly aware of the threats to our water supply, our aquifers, and, I think that I would hope to see a strong evolution of the way that we live and the way that we manage what we're doing, so that we can, preserve what we have for the benefit of the future generations.
And so how are we going to do that as queer people? How can we? What is our role in that?
Gosh, I don't know if I don't know if I want to answer that today. Things are so crazy right now. The first thing that pops in my head is revolution. I think we can lead a revolution of consciousness and a revolution of the heart, because I think the more people can be awakened to how they are already a part of nature.
Yes.
Even if we live in the middle of a bustling city, you're breathing the same air that the bears are breathing. You're drinking the same water. And even though we may live our lives and seldom ever visit a forest, it doesn't mean that what's going on in the forest and in the wetlands isn't going to impact our people and our way of life down the road. So I think a greater awareness, and I think that's already happened. I've personally always have felt that connection because I'm a mutant, but my hope is that we can inspire that shift, and kind of have a critical mass. I kind of dream, well, if we can just have a critical mass of people who, no longer look at nature as this thing or as this machine, but relate to nature as a living, conscious mother. This is our life. We cannot exist outside, and she's a living thing. And we've become so, our ant-like culture, I feel like we've created this false sense of separation. And I think that that's an illusion, and that illusion needs to be peeled back.
I love it.
Any thoughts, Michael?
Well, you know, I was trying to think of, you know, the conversation was about, you know, the Florida Everglades, and I unfortunately am not connected over there yet. The only thing I can think of that, you know, I could do and, you know, help, you know, encourage others to do is to just, you know, raise awareness, you know, like Matthew was saying, you know, make people more consciously aware of what's going on. I'm actually, you know, this year I'm going to be moving back to my home state of Texas, and, you know, listening to the conversations we've been having today, I'm like, I don't feel like I'm that connected to my home like I should be. So that's going to be something that I'm going to be working on when I get back to Texas, is, you know, finding out what needs to be done there, how I can help the communities in Texas, the environment in Texas. Because now that I think about it, you know, through most of my adult life and even my childhood, I can't think of environmental issues that have come up in Texas other than, you know, the fracking issues and that have been within the past few years. And, like, I realize I need to do more to get involved with that when I get home. But, yeah, that's me.
Houston. Go ahead. I was going to say, Michael, when you do go back, you have, because of your Unnamed Path training, you have this great toolkit so that when you go back and looking at the landscape of Texas, you also have the ability and the skill set to connect with the spirit of the land, to sit and ask whether it be, you know, a particular river or a particular forest, to listen to what it has to say and help bring that message to the human people. And maybe function, maybe get to function to an extent as a messenger.
Yes, that's right. I remember that in our work through Love the Everglades movement, we try to do our work across the full spectrum of being, so that in this way we can engage as many people as possible. If it's business, is it science, is it the arts, is it spirituality? Yes, we need to work through all those areas. So if people don't want to participate in politics, they can participate in ceremony or keeping the message alive in the culture through the arts. So that way we try to empower and engage and include as many people as possible. So there's a lot of things that people can do, whether they know it or not, and in their own way, according to their own skills and talents.
Mm-hmm. You know, before we continue on with our questions that we have for Houston, I actually just got a ping from our Facebook page. One of our current listeners wanted to say hello to Houston. I'm going to butcher his name. He's actually your friend, Matthew. Dayan?
Dayan.
Dayan. He wanted to say hello to Houston. And he was saying, first off, say hello to Houston for me. Then here's a potential solution that speaks to me as an educator, to be shining glorious examples of what this ecological radical consciousness is, represent the mythic state of humanity and reawaken people to the natural world.
Yes.
I love that. Dayan is such a, you know, he comes up with he's a beautiful poet. He expresses things so magically.
And I'm really inspired by people like Dayan and others, because he was reminding us about his own connection to the spirit of the land that he refers to as Our Lady Florida, using shamanic journeying and meditation and other practices, he's been able to establish a dialogue and be inspired to do ceremonies across the land on behalf of the water and the spirits. So I'm really glad that Diane chimed in and reminded us of how what we can do and how important it is to strengthen our connection with the land and the spirits and the elements.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Matthew, he says you're making him blush.
So we don't have a whole lot of time left. So there were a couple of things that I wanted to talk about, but Houston, actually, I'd like to have you come back on the show again and talk more about some other related but other topics. I wanted you to have the opportunity to tell our listeners about any events or projects that you have coming up.
Okay, great. Well, people can reach out to me through Twitter at Everglades Love or Instagram, love_the_Everglades. And people can participate in our upcoming direct actions, our conferences, our art exhibits. And related to what we're talking about here on this program, I'm engaged in a project called Queering the Everglades. So, yeah, just reach out, and I look forward to seeing what we can do together.
Cool. Me? Very cool. And, Houston, every time I see you, you always seem so grounded and so at peace. Even for me personally, in the face of everything that's going on, I have all kinds of angst and stress and, you know, feel like I'm running around, you know, trying to wield a flaming sword. How do you maintain your balance?
Well, I heard you talking at the very beginning about the challenge of doing the shadow work. And I think that similarly, being able to face and embrace and own my darkness has really helped me on this path of healing and wholeness that I find myself on. So it's work that we need to do within ourselves, but also within our communities and with our support networks, and ceremony plays a big part. And I always honor our plant medicines, because it has brought me incredible healing. So I hear you talking about your own shadow work, and I was like, yes, I know what he's talking about, because I'm doing that too. Yeah, so that kind of stuff, and the plants. The plants are beautiful medicines, and we got to care for them and love them and sustain them.
Yes, very true. Very true. And can you tell us a little bit more, for the benefit of our listeners, about Queering the Everglades?
Okay, cool. Well, I'm really looking forward to expressing this through the arts, through expressing it through events and direct actions and encounters. Are we creating a space? Are we exploring the types of relationships that we can have with the elements and the ecology? Are we community organizing with queer communities? I think that all of that is going to be involved in Queering the Everglades. But I think that some of the first ways that I would like to work through that is through the artistic mode. But I'm also looking for proposals. I want this to be a collaborative and cooperative effort. So I have some ideas, but I also want to hear ideas from other people. And if I can provide access or resources, I would love to do that. So I think it's going to be artistically based, first of all, but then broader community actions and events and various types of relationships that we can have with the land and the water and the animals.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, you're definitely going to be getting a proposal from me.
Yes, so. Let's do it.
And,
oh my gosh, Houston, thank you so much for being with us today. Oh, go ahead, Matthew.
Oh,
I just wanted to, before we wrapped up, I just wanted to know, if Houston, if you had any closing thoughts or any messages you wanted to leave our listeners with.
Yes, yes.
Let's see. I think I've said it. I would like to, again, reiterate this, the preeminence of the sacred plant medicines in our lives, and that we can know them and communicate with them and build relationships with them and be healed by them. So that's what I would say. Respect the plants and respect the water.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Houston, thank you so much. We definitely want to have you back because there's so much more that we want to talk about. And to you and to all of our listeners, everyone, please have a beautiful and safe and magical weekend. And wherever you are, and enjoy whatever sunshine there is, and be blessed, and share your blessings and your light with those around you.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm going to end the show with a song from the Green Album.
Oh, cool.
Let's see. Yes. Ginger Doss, Gaia Lives, from the Green Album.
It is your gift.
That was Gaia Lives from the Green Album by Ginger Doss. We're so glad that you chose to spend your Saturday afternoon with us. Again, I'm Michael Graywolf, and you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path with my co-host Matthew Sidney and our guest Houston Cypress. If you would like to get in touch with Matthew or myself, you can reach us at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at walking_theup. Or you can email us at you can email us at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. Or you can reach us on Facebook, which we had a guest do that on today's show. Awesome. At facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. We hope to have Houston back very soon, because we still had like lots of questions, but we didn't want the show to get too long for y'all. Again, everyone have a blessed day, and we will be back in a couple of weeks.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witch School's Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere education system is available any place on Earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witch School's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years, and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.